So, look at that.
Hey, here we are. So we'll do a clap and all right. So we'll just start all over again. So you're clapping. You don't even know if we're any good. So that could be awkward later when you're like, all right. So, well, we'll introduce our family because you're going to hear plenty more about them. So I'll let you
yes,
do that.
And you may see them running around because three of the four are here. We have four kids. We've been married about 21 years. And our oldest is 19, and she is actually in Nicaragua right now doing missions work, so she could not come with us. She is a sophomore in college and studies math and biology and took one psychology class this year and hated it. And with between all the psychology we have between us, I don't know where she came from, really. So that's our oldest. Her name is Taylor. Murphy is our second daughter. She's turning 16. She is here this week. You may hear us refer to her. She's Madeline Murphy. When we moved from Arkansas to Colorado, she changed her name to going by her middle name, Murphy, because she felt like she was one of 10 Maddies everywhere she went. And Murphy just fits her really well. So if you hear us say Maddie, it's Murphy. Murphy is Maddie, just to clarify that. Number three is our son, Garrison. He's 12. He is going into the sixth grade. He is here with us as well. And he is just a delight. He's such a sweet, tender-hearted little guy. And we insisted on keeping him with us this week just to have some good family time so he didn't go to overnight camp. And then number four, this is Antoinette Rose. Annie is her name. And I don't know if any of you were here in 2004. We had sent you off out just to wander the campgrounds and to pray about what God was calling you to as a couple. And so we also did this at that point. We were actually standing right out here on the peninsula. And God told us that he wanted us to adopt. And I'm adopted as an infant. And so it was something that we had always wanted to do. Well, we went ahead and named her that day. And we named her Antoinette Rose, just a girl. We didn't know where she was from. We didn't know when she would come. There were lots of families with Russian children adopted here that week. And so we thought maybe she would be Russian. Fast forward to make a very long story short, we were at work at John Brown in Siloam Springs, Arkansas in 2009. And a friend of ours came into the office and he said, hey, just got back from China, held this little girl at this orphanage, just was delighted with her and excited, had no idea of our story. Long story short, we found out her name was Annie. Here we had been praying for an Annie since 2004, starting here at Northern Pines. And literally we were like, well, you pray for an Annie for 5 years, and God brings you an Annie, you walk forward. So 18 months later, she joined our family and came home with us from China. And the ironic thing, and it's not so ironic as Christians, she turned 6 tomorrow, so here she is. She was born in our hearts in 2004 here. And tomorrow she'll be 6. So it's just, Northern Pines holds that precious place in our hearts because we really do feel like God spoke to us and changed our direction at that point. So we are thrilled to be here with you again. And I know God will speak to you as he spoke to us many years ago.
That's the way to start off.
I know.
And we crying too. So, geez. So it is special. You know, when I get to speak on my own, and then Aaron and I get to do this together, not as often, but we definitely get to do this some. It's always fun to listen to her introduce our family compared to when I do it. Like when I do it, it maybe takes 4 seconds or something. and when she does it, I actually learn stuff, you know.
It was about here our that family. We named Annie. Did you remember that?
That's true. I should probably learn their names. Maybe that would be a good thing. So we... anytime I see that picture, though, it kind of takes me back to our journey, and I think, as someone said, I think maybe you said, we've been married 21 years, and just to think about the journey over the years, do you guys remember sort of the moment that you fell in love with your spouse? Who remembers that moment? Kind of the moment you knew this was probably the one? All right, it's still coming back, so... You have your hand still up, so he gets, like, special credit because it's the other people that you didn't raise your hand. Now we're watching the conversations happen, you know. You don't remember, really. We're at a family camp, and you can't remember when you met, you know, fell in love. And we just encourage you, just throw your hand up next time. You know, right? We don't know the difference. We're not going to challenge that. It'll go better for you. See, there you go. It's just delayed. See, he's just remembering back. But I ask that because I do remember the moment that, at least for me, I remember the moment that I knew that this was who I wanted to marry. And sadly, I don't think it was quite the same moment for you at all, really.
Yeah. No. And you'll understand why once you hear this story. We were actually at Grand Canyon University in Phoenix, Arizona. How many of you have ever heard of Grand Canyon? You know, they're the fighting antelopes.
It's a very manly name. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So there we were. We were sitting in the back of this class, and I had just transferred in as a sophomore. And so I had seen Greg around, but I actually didn't even know your name was Greg. So there you go. You don't know our kids' names. I didn't know your name. There we were sitting in the back of this class, and he had fallen sound asleep. He was sitting right in front of me, so I don't know if he'd been up late the night before, or you were very tired. And he wasn't just sleeping. He was drooling, sleeping, you know, so it was ugly sleep. Literally, it was pooling on the desk. It was about to pour over. So I thought I would help him, and I shook him and woke him up.
This story gets worse every time I hear you say it.
Someone
it'll
actually
be like, I parted his drooling sea, you know, it's like Moses, you know, next time.
Someone actually asked me this morning if we were the ones with sitting in the back of a classroom, and yes,
we
a matter
were.
Of fact, we were. That's how we're known now.
I don't know what I was doing. I didn't have Stanley to keep me entertained and awake. See, that's the problem. I was sleeping, and so, now, did you hear the part that she, did you hear her say the word help, that she wanted to help me? Did you hear that one part? Can I tell you how she tried to help me? Listen to this. I don't know her. Total stranger, never met her. I am sitting right in front of her. We're in the back of this class. So she decides to help me because I'm sound asleep. She reaches forward and grabs my arm, kind of shakes me awake, and goes, Greg! And I wake up and kind of, you know, wipe the drool, and I look at her like, huh? And so she goes, quick! She goes, Greg, you got to stand up. I went, what? She goes, yeah, quick, the professor, he just called on you. And I went, what? I said, why? She goes, he just called on you to pray. And I said, are you being serious? She goes, yeah. Now, again, why would a stranger make this up, right? This is impossible. So I believed her. So I stood up from the back of that class, and I started to pray out loud. Imagine you're taking notes, and all of a sudden, you know, someone starts praying. This is a Baptist school, so we weren't used to, you know, that kind of prayer language. So, you know. So I had that. Have you ever been praying out loud and you get that really eerie feeling that people are looking at you? Has that ever happened? You kind of peek and, well, people are pointing at me and I don't know what is going on. Well, I finished praying. I sat down. Now the whole class is laughing at me. And so I don't know what my friends are on the ground. They're kind of slapping the floor and I'm looking at her and she's red in the face and I don't know what's happening until the professor goes. He goes, Greg, he goes, appreciate your enthusiasm, said a wonderful prayer, but he said, maybe next time you could let me finish lecturing before you close the class in prayer. Is that the meanest thing you've ever heard in your life? I mean, honestly, that was how she tried to help me. And at the same time, I remember thinking, wow, the fact that she could do that to a total stranger so impressed me that I remember thinking, that's the girl I'm going to marry someday, you know? We'll have so much fun, and, you know, or I'll make her spend a lifetime with me. That'll teach her to do that to someone. Either way, it took, what, about 4 years for you to see beyond the drool. And
so 4 years later, we were engaged and married, and we thought it was just going to be a lifetime of laughter, and I continued to help you, right?
Oh, I'll tell you more. Yes. Yes. Stop. When he said helpmate, he was kidding, all right, I think, so quit it. Yeah, so after we got married, here's the part we just want to be totally honest, all right? So we got married thinking everything was going to be perfect and wonderful, and I was getting my doctorate, and, you know, I was always starting to do a little speaking with my dad, and a guy named Gary Smalley, have you heard of him? Okay, I know. Some of you are like, oh, I thought that's who you were, and you're disappointed now. I get that look of disappointment a lot. Who's he? You know, whatever, you know. So here I really was convinced that we were going to have something very different. We weren't going to have conflict like other people. It was all going to be perfect and wonderful until, I don't know, 2 years probably into our marriage. To be honest, I really thought we were one more argument away from her leaving. And I didn't think she'd divorce me. I really just didn't think she wanted to be around me anymore. It really got that bad. And as we look back on that season, there are some things that we began to learn. Now, luckily, we had a great mentor couple, Dr. Gary Oliver and his wife, Carrie, who kind of stepped in and helped us out. I mean, we did some things, but I tell you what, looking back, there was probably one thing in particular that really created the biggest difference. That's where we want to start with you guys, is we're kind of talking this week. This, for us, is really truly the foundation. So here's what we want you to do real quick, okay? You're going to take no more than like 43 seconds to do this, all right? I want you to turn to your spouse, turn to the person sitting next to you, whoever, and want you to figure out, if you only could come up with one kind of it, the thing that you believe is the key to having a great marriage. So whatever you think is the foundation, but you're only allowed one, what would that be? Okay, so real quick, turn to each other, figure out what is that one thing, and then we're going to hear some of your answers, all right? On your mark, get set, go! All right, so did you come up with it? All right, so yell some of these out. What do you think the key to having a great marriage is? What? What was that? Okay, so communication, that's usually what we hear first. Good. What was that one? Okay, grace. I like it. That helps. Caring. Okay, good. Honesty. Heard that one. Okay, so having a relationship with God. Name dropper. That's really good, though. That's it's hard to... Who's got something better than that? So I heard forgiveness. That was good. Yeah, what else? Any other ones? Fun. Oh, yeah. Passion. By passion, you mean sex? Is that what you meant? But too afraid to... Okay, I know. It's okay. It's in the Bible, I've heard. So it's okay. Yeah, any other ones? These are good. Okay, respect. Trust. Okay, all good. I don't think, right, there's nothing that we're hearing that we would disagree with. However, this is what we would like, where we'd like to begin is to have you to think about something a little bit different. As a matter of fact, what we've found is if something else isn't happening first, a lot of those things that you yelled out really don't take place. As a matter of fact, when we were really stuck in hurting, I mean, all those things we wanted, but something else wasn't really taking place. And for us, this is really the foundation of a great marriage for us. So we want to throw it out there, let you guys kind of think about it. But to kind of set this up, we want to tell you about what happened to our oldest daughter, who's now, it's so weird, so now a sophomore in college, on her first day of kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. How many of you moms especially remember that first day that you sent your oldest child off? You know, it's like, don't you just remember it like it was yesterday? I mean, I can tell you what she was wearing. She had a little red plaid skirt and white little bows in her pigtails and black little patent shoes. I mean, it's just like yesterday. And it was hard. I mean, it was really hard for me as a mom to send her off to school. I know for you,
it wasn't quite as difficult, actually. So,
yeah.
Red plaid skirt.
You don't remember
where we
live.
I just take your word for that. I have no idea if that's true or not, but it sounds right. So
that's how I remember
okay,
it.
Okay, that sounds good.
So during that time, I was in graduate school getting my master's degree, and Greg was going to be at home that afternoon when the bus came to drop Taylor back off. And, you know, there's not really a judgment in this statement, but interesting things
when you have to qualify it, it's judgment, isn't it, guys? All right, come
no
on.
No judging. Just... Observation, very nice. Just, you know, that things often happen when I'm not there with the kids and you. So I gave Greg instructions. I said, you know, the bus is going to come around, you know, at 3:15, be standing right here on the stairs, and Taylor will come up and you greet her, right? And that's not quite exactly what ended up happening.
No. So I'm standing there like she tells me to, right on a little porch. The bus pulls up. Taylor gets off. And as I'm watching, as Taylor gets off the bus, I'm thinking, what? Because as she walked off the bus, I found her holding hands with a boy. I just remember thinking, well, that's weird. And I wasn't sure what to make of that. And I thought, well, maybe it's a bus buddy or, well, I don't know what they're doing. But the disturbing part was they weren't just, you know, like the friendship hold, you know, kind of like that. You know, they were doing this. It was just disturbing to watch my five-year-old daughter in this intimate handhold with this some boy. And so I'm trying to make sense as they're walking right up. And before I can even think how to handle this, Taylor yells out. She goes, Dad. She goes, hi. She goes, this is Hank. We're in love, and we're going to get married. I mean, I remember thinking, you've been to school for like 8 hours. What is going on inside this school? You're going to homeschool starting tomorrow, you know. But there they were. And I thought, well, I got to have a little bit of fun with these two. And so I said, really? So I said, you guys are going to get married? And they're like, uh-huh. And I said, let me ask you. I said, being five and all, I said, first of all, where will you live? And they kind of looked at each other, looked at me, and shrugged their shoulders. And then Taylor grabs hold of this boy and drags him over, and they huddled on the side of the porch. And I can hear him. You know, they're talking about something. So they came back, and Taylor says, Dad, if it's okay with you and Mom, Hank and I would like to live in the backyard in the little Tyke's house. You know, the little toddler plastic thing, you know. And I said, sure. I said, yeah, I Mom will love having you right there in the backyard. She can visit anytime. And I said, yeah. But I said, now, Hank, I said, and then you'll have my daughter in a plastic house. I said, what kind of stuff do you need to take care of? You're going to need some kind of stuff. And he kind of, again, looked at her, looked at me, shrugged his shoulders. And then together they went right back and, you know, huddled up. It is actually disturbing to watch your five-year-old daughter and her fiancé problem solve, you know, problem solve better than you and your wife do. So that's a whole nother story. But this time, it was so funny. When they came back, old Hank stepped up and he said, well, he goes, we talked about it and we need three things. I went, really? I said, all right, well, tell me, what do you need? He goes, well, first of all, he goes, we need the TV and the remote. He goes, we need a box of Lucky Charms and a roll of toilet paper. Seriously. And as a guy, that actually made sense to me. I was thinking I could live weeks on those three things alone. I thought, all right, kind of high-fived him, welcomed him to our family. And it was bizarre, wasn't it, to watch them over the next couple of weeks in their engagement
period. Yeah. Thing, yeah, it was. It was nauseating, to say the least.
Thank you.
Literally every day Taylor would walk through the door after school and she would just have these glowing reports about Hank. Hank could do no wrong. Hank would get 100% in his spelling test. Hank would, you know, kick the home run ball at kickball at recess. I mean, it was just thing after thing that Hank could do no wrong. Do you remember when you were engaged and dating and all of those cute little behaviors like drooling were just, they were cute and me helping was cute and we had all these positive things to say. Well, that was Taylor. It was day after day after day until one day she walked through the doors and she did not have nice things to say. And I kind of thought, you know, I could go down that road with her, but I'm going to wait and let Greg finish this off with her since you were there when it started.
How did letting me handle this make sense in your mind? I'm not sure based on what you already told them. Anyway, it just hit me for the first time. I've heard this lots of times.
Yeah. Well, you were there when the romance started.
It's me.
I figured you could be there when the romance ended.
Is that it? All right. So I did. I came home. So she sends me up to Taylor's room. And there's Taylor crying on her bed. And so I sit down. And she kind of fell into me. And I'm just holding my little girl. And so she's weeping. I said, honey, you know what? What'd you do wrong? Are you in trouble? And she went, no. I said, why are you crying? She said, well, Dad, you're never going to guess. But she said, today, Hank broke up with me. So I wanted to laugh, but I didn't because you know, I'm a trained professional. And so I said, honey, I'm so sorry. And she goes, I know. And I said, well, you must be hurting. She goes, I am. But she goes, I'm really mad at him. And I said, yeah, that would make sense. I said, disappointed. She's like, no, you don't understand. She goes, I hate him. And I went, oh, okay. Sounds like your mom. But anyway, I said, okay. So she says, no. She goes, you don't understand. She goes, I want him to die. I swear. She gets that from her side of the family for wondering. I'm just saying, if you're wondering, what on earth? Here that morning, she goes to school and she's in love with old Hank. And now, what, 8 hours later, she not only doesn't like him, but she wants the kid to die. What happened? Well, I tell you what, the same thing that happened to Taylor, I'm convinced is exactly what happened to us when those first couple years of marriage. It's actually the same thing that all these couples that we've worked with over the years, we do something called a marriage intensive. So working with couples who are in just dire straits, in crisis, same thing that happens to them. And let me ask you this way. Okay, so think about it this way. That morning when she left, everything was wonderful. If you had to guess, what would you say was the state of her heart towards Hank, opened or closed? So when it was going good, her heart was what? Yeah, opened, right? Okay, that kind of makes sense to us. Now, so once she was hurt and disappointed and felt rejected, what do you think happened to her little heart? Yeah, it closed. You guys, I'm telling you, of all the things that we have learned about relationships, especially marriage, this is for us, this was the biggest paradigm shift, the biggest area that transformed our relationship, when really we realized that, you know what truly the key to having a great marriage is? It really starts by having two open hearts. You see, it's the reverse that's the problem. The problem is in relationships within a marriage. See, once we get hurt, once we get frustrated, once things start to happen, maybe we felt betrayed or there's a lot of conflict like for us, what happens is that our hearts begin to close. And that over time, if that doesn't change, over time, see, a closed heart is going to ultimately harden. The only time Jesus ever talked about divorce, what did he say? Well, Moses permitted you divorce because why? Because of the hardness of your heart. I'm telling you, there's been no bigger awareness or insight for us than to realize how absolutely important it is for us to learn how do we keep our hearts open to each other. You know, a heart is going to open and close every day. We can catch a look, we can be in a get in a squabble, have some conflict. I mean, instantly, I'll tell you what, your heart can close in just a matter of moments. And yet, learning how to keep our hearts open is so important. That's why, I mean, even in Proverbs, King Solomon said, but he who hardens his heart falls into trouble. And we say that that is no place more true than in a relationship. Does that make sense, a little tiny bit sense? We're going to really explain this. I'm telling you, the key to having a great marriage is having open hearts. But that's a little tricky. Love this quote that we found one time.
Mm-hmm. One of our favorite authors, John Eldridge, in a book called Waking the Dead, he said, "The enemy knows how vital the heart is, even if we do not. And all of his forces are fixed upon its destruction. For if he can disable or deaden your heart, then he has effectively foiled the plan of God, which was to create a world where love reigns. By taking out your heart, the enemy takes you out, and you are essential to the story." And that's, we love this quote because we do have an adversary. We have an enemy. And you know what? When our hearts are closed down, then God's love doesn't reign because nothing good comes out when our hearts are closed down. We were created to have an open heart where God's love can flow through us to our spouses and to others that we give out of his abundance. But the enemy is after our hearts because he gets our hearts hardened, shut down, then this is such at higher risk for destruction. So we just love what he has to say about that.
Yeah, and so again, relationally, why we're saying this is because we think that this is so important to have an open heart.
Mm-hmm. Because really, for friendship, passion, fun, intimacy, deep connection, whatever it was and is that you wanted when you walked down the aisle, when you fell in love, when you had dreamt about the future together, whatever it was that you were after, hearts have to be open for that to happen. Two open hearts are what is going to bring all of that to fruition. Think about these scriptures. 1 Peter 1:22, love one another deeply from where? From the heart. Love one another deeply from the heart. And then Proverbs 4:23, which we all know, above all else, guard your heart, for it's the wellspring of life. I mean, that's the greatest, one of the greatest commands that we get.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the greatest commandment, love God with all your what? Yeah, why does it start first there? With all the parts of who he goes to talk about us, it starts with the heart. In other words, we're just convinced that if we're going to have a great marriage, It's going to happen because we've learned how to keep our hearts open to each other. Now, let's talk real quick about why does a heart close? Okay, in our relationships, hearts will close for a lot of things. Sin, you know, busyness. I mean, there's a lot of things that can happen. But in a relationship, I'll tell you what we've learned is that anytime you don't feel emotionally safe with someone, so if you don't feel safe with your spouse, then your heart will close and you're going to react in some way. You might fight or you might get away from them. But what we found is this kind of this pattern that if you don't feel safe, your heart closes and then you disconnect from that person. It's just a pattern we've seen over and over and over again. As a matter of fact, I saw this on an airplane with Murphy, who's here, our 16-year-old. When she was like 3, it was just me and Murphy on this airplane. Mid-flight, Murphy stands up, turns around, faces the rest of the plane and yells out, as loud as she can yells out, she goes, "Hi!" And like scares like 5 rows of people. They're, you know, whoa. And she goes, "Hi, my name's Murphy." So people are like, "Hi, Murphy." And I'm thinking, "Oh, here we go." And then she yells out, "And this is my daddy." I'm like, "Hello." And she then yells out as loud as she could go, "And he spanks me." What on earth? Talk about feeling unsafe with someone then in that very moment. Okay, what else was Murphy going to share with the rest of the plane that now are glaring at me? Okay, so I'm telling you, in those moments, it just our hearts can close. Anytime we don't feel safe with someone. But here's really the cool news is this.
Mm-hmm. The great news is that when we feel emotionally safe with someone, when we feel like we can open our hearts and our hearts are open to them, then our hearts open and then we get that connection. Intimacy, it just occurs. That's our natural setting, is to be open. It takes a lot of energy, does it not, when we're offended, when we're closed off to someone. It takes a lot of energy to keep our heart closed down because we were created to be open, relational. So when we feel safe, our heart's open, and then that connection, everything that we desire in our relationship, it just happens effortlessly, really. So all the things you talked about, those can happen when there's two open hearts. And so we want to encourage you just to contemplate this thought. For your home, for your marriage, make the goal to make it the safest place on earth. So the most emotionally safe place on earth. So that when your spouse, when your kids, when they walk through that door at the end of a day, when, you know, the world can just be cruel, but when they walk through those doors into your arms, that they know it is the safest place they've been all day. And you think about, you know, God, he is always our safe place. Yeah. So we want to encourage you, make that your goal in your home, to be the safest place on earth.
Does that make sense? So we're going to talk about really the rest of our time together over this week. We're just going to keep adding in elements that we believe really create that home that Aaron's talking about, that place that feels safe. Because when we feel safe, our hearts open. And as Aaron said, we're not making this up. This isn't some pop psychology. I mean, this is what God does for us. Think of how many times that he has made it clear that he is safe to us. Like when in Proverbs, the 18:10, that for the Lord is a strong tower, the righteous run to it and are what? And are safe. King David, same thing. Keep me what? Safe, O God, for in you, okay, I take refuge. There's so many great verses. In Joel chapter 2, the chapter heading says, rend your heart. It talks about how God didn't want the Israelites to tear their clothes. He wanted them to rend, to tear open their hearts. And he goes on to explain, because basically I'm a safe God. I'm loving, I'm compassionate. He goes on to talk about safety. And that's, I tell you what, I want to be like him. I know that in a relationship, if she's going to open her heart to me, it's because I'm learning and I'm acting safe with her. And that's really what we want to focus in on. So we're going to give you a quick definition of what do we mean by safety? Because it's one of those words, what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm. Because physical safety, we get that. It's when, you know, physically when you're safe, when you're cared for. Emotional safety is basically feeling free to open up and reveal who you really are. Your deepest feelings, your thoughts, your needs, and that's in your heart. So really it's that you're able to place your heart out there and know that this person is going to get the value get your value, get the value of this stuff. They're going to listen, they're going to understand, they're going to validate these dreams that you have in your heart, these needs, these feelings. That is true emotional safety. You think about when someone is judging you, criticizing you, do you want to offer your dreams, your thoughts, your feelings? No, because your heart shuts down and you want to keep it close where it's safe. So when someone gets that and values that, you're more willing to open up and to connect.
So again, does that make sense? So that's what I want. I want to know that I can let her in on that deep stuff, knowing that she'll value, you know, who I am, how I feel, my dreams, all that stuff. And the moment we do, then we're likely to open to them. So how do we then cultivate safety? That's really what it comes down to. So if I want her to feel safe with me so her heart opens to me, then I got to know how to do that. And again, we would say, let's go back straight to Ephesians 5. There's a great verse, Ephesians 5:29, that basically says, for no one ever hated his own flesh, okay, but does two important things. So no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it. What's cool about Ephesians 5, a little bit before that, we are, especially as a husband, I'm being told to love my wife as I love my own body. So if I'm supposed to love her, you know, like I'm loving me, well, what does that mean? Well, there's the answer right there. It's that I nourish it and cherish it. We believe those two little words can create safety within any relationship, but especially a marriage. Watch how this works. Let's take the first one, cherish. Okay, we believe it's a mindset. It's an attitude. It says that when I look at her, that I get how incredibly valuable she is. You hear a noise? Mm-hmm. Is there a ringing? It's not just me. All right, because I hadn't had my meds this morning, and I was, okay, that's perfect. All right. So cherish is that when I look at Aaron, okay, that I recognize, I see this person that has tremendous value. You know, when I'm mad or when I'm hurt by her, you know, it's easy to lose sight of that. But the truth never changes. The truth is that God says that she's incredibly valuable. Listen to some of these verses. First of all, he says that she was made in his image. I mean, that alone makes her incredibly valuable. He says that she is fearfully and wonderfully made. I love that in Exodus, God says that Aaron is his treasured possession. I love that phrase, treasured possession. Jesus said that she is his glorious inheritance. I love in Isaiah, since you are precious and honored in my sight. Okay, in Matthew 6:26, look at the birds of the air. Do they not sow or reap or store away in the barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them? Are you not much more valuable than they are? I mean, just verse after verse after verse that talks about how valuable she is. That's the truth. The truth is that she is valuable. And if I want to help her to begin to feel safe with me, it's because I'm going to recognize that. I'm going to really get that value. And I'm going to hold on to that. You know what's cool? Is that there's several scriptures that says something like this. For where your treasure is, so in other words, what you value, there will your what? There will your heart be also. In other words, what I value, see, that's then what I'm drawn to. My heart opens to her. And the more I value her, see, her heart opens to me. That's what's so cool. You know, we saw this one time, a really interesting way. Actually, just a couple of years ago with my parents. My mom and dad, Gary and Norma, have been married 49 years. So here in just a few months, they'll celebrate 50 years of marriage. I mean, think about it. My dad has written like 60-some books. He's one of the world's foremost experts on marriage. And you know what I love about their marriage to this day? Every once in a while, they get into a big old fight. It's so fun to watch my mom and dad fight. It just makes me feel normal. I'm like, oh, how cute. If they can still do it and stay together, we're okay. And so remember we were with them a couple Thanksgivings ago, and it was the sweetest little thing.
It sure was. Their little gray hair, and they woke up and they were irritated with each other. Our whole family, all four of our kids, and Greg and I, there we are. We're standing there. They wake up. They're just irritable, and they're just picking at each other back and forth, back and forth. I mean, it was just awkward, you know, when you're there and someone's not getting along. And finally, it just escalated, and it just, boom, they were done. One went one way, one went the other way, and we just stood there. And we're like, what do we do? So the girls and I followed his mom and, you know, went with her and comforted her and, you know, empathized with her like we do as ladies, so well validated about, you know, what was going on. And you and Garrison followed your dad.
Actually, he just walked by, my son and I, and we kind of looked at each other like, I don't know. I said, you know, Grandpa likes you better anyways. Why don't you go talk to Grandpa? And so Garrison's like, me? You're the adult. You go talk to him. I'm like, oh, fine. I said, hey, Dad. I said, whoa, hold up. And he goes, what? And I said, well, I can see you're upset. Yeah? And I said, well, I literally know what you need to do right now. I know how to help you right now. He went, huh? I said, I do. I said, I'm trained. I know exactly how to help you. And he went, huh? I said, here, I said, sit down. So I sat him down in his living room. Now, the truth is, I was just going to try to be funny, you know, because sometimes when you're laughing, it sort of puts you in a little bit better mood, right? Get your heart open just a little bit, right? Okay? So I was just going to try to make him laugh. And so he's sitting there in his living room, and I said, yeah. I said, hey, hold on. I said, I'm going to go over to the bookshelf, and I'm going to take down one of the books that you've written, and I'm going to read to you what you should be doing for Mom right now. So the office door that slammed in my face, I think he didn't think it was very funny, but I still think that was funny, all right? So we can agree to disagree, all right? So I waited a little bit, then I came back, and I knocked on his door, and who is it? I said, hey, it's Greg. Come in. And so I walk into his office, and I see him. He's sitting at his desk. He's looking at his computer. Now, I was just going to go around and just kind of, you know, give him a little pat and say, hey, can I pray with you? I'm sorry. I was just trying to be funny. And so as I walked around, I can see what he's looking at. He's not online. He's actually pulled up a Word document. So he's reading this document. And so as I got closer, I could actually see what it said. Very interesting. The top of the document, remember, my mom's name is Norma. It says, why Norma is so valuable. Seriously. And I said, what is this right here? He goes, well, he said a number of years ago, he goes, I was thinking about your mom, and you know, I thought about some stuff that I really love about her, what I really appreciate. So he goes, I just wrote it down, and over the years, I've just added to the list. I kid you not, there were hundreds and hundreds of little words and phrases about my mom. And I thought, well, that is so cool. I said, but I got to ask you, I said, aren't you mad at Mom? He's like, oh, I can't stand her. And I said, well, I thought so. So I said, why are you looking at this right now? And so I'll never forget what he said. This is the truth. He said, well, he goes, I've also learned that I can come into my office and stew about your mom, think about how mad I am at her, what she did. And he goes, or he goes, I make myself open up this list and I start to read down. He said, you know, I get to the first couple and I'm mad at her. So I think, that's not true, and why'd I write that one? And I'm erasing that one for sure. he said, I get through enough that he goes, I start to remember that you've got an amazing mom. I thought, that is that verse. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. How he's drawn back towards my mom simply by remembering how valuable she is. And I think we think that's one of the best things that we can do. And we would actually encourage you to do that same thing today. We want to give you an opportunity. That's kind of you're going to have two little homework assignments for today. They're easy, all right? They're fun. The first one is this one. It's simply to begin to identify, what is it about my spouse that I love? What do I value? When I think about them, what is it? Maybe it's a part of their personality that they love to play practical jokes on you. Okay, that could be one. That would definitely one I'd put down for her. Actually, we've done this. We have these lists. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a part of their character. It's integrity. Maybe it's the way they live out their spirituality. Maybe it's the way they're just servants or whatever it is. It can be anything. But we encourage you, begin to make that list. There's power in that list, especially in those moments that you're going to forget. And boy, that can be something you really return to. Okay, so that's homework assignment number one. Is that clear? Okay. I would just take 5 minutes at some point. And just kind of write that down and then just go back and forth and kind of share from that list, share that with each other. Because it's cool when she mm-hmm. did this for me. I mean, I, there were things that she said that, wow, that I didn't know.
Yeah, because it's not only, it's good for you, but then also share it with your spouse. Because there's going to be days that they forget how valuable they are. And, you know, to see that that's what you see in them, we have such an opportunity to breathe life into each other as a couple. So look at that list, especially like Greg is saying, on those moments when you're offended, when you're disappointed, when you're hurt. I mean, talk about an opportunity to open up your heart as you read through and begin to remember, but then also share it with them that so they can also remember.
Yeah, who's competitive? Do we have any competitive people? All right. Because see, tomorrow we're going to actually start off by having you shout out some of these things. So don't make it awkward because you didn't do your homework, all right? Right? Because it would be bad. Like if I didn't have anything to say because I hadn't done this, this would be embarrassing.
That would be, I would be embarrassed for you.
Don't let your neighbor win out, all right? So do this as, really, if nothing else, just because you're competitive, all right? So that's good. So the first and foremost, we need to, our mindset needs to be that I cherish you, but that's
yeah, don't not quite stop it. There. Because cherish, like Greg said, is an attitude. It's an attitude of the mind of remembering how valuable they are. Matter of fact, you forgot to use this. You know, it's like this, what would this be? A crystal diamond. You know, it's so, oh, this is real. That's right. You gave this to me, you know, 5 years into marriage, I think. You know, that
I
it's,
love you.
Yeah, thanks. you know, this is how valuable they are, you know, and cherish it. But the thing is, it just can't stop as an attitude. We then have to nourish, and what that is the action of it. Because, you know, this is valuable, but if I threw it on the ground and it shattered, that's not treating it in valuable ways. So we can't just have the attitude to treat our spouses or to remember how valuable they are. We have to also have action so then we can treat them in valuable ways, care for them in valuable ways, in ways that are valuable to them. In 1 John 3:18, it says, let us not love with mere words, but with action and in truth, or tongue, but with actions. Love is a verb, not a noun. It is active. Love is not just feelings of passion and romance, but it's a behavior. So let's make it a behavior, that attitude of how valuable in remembering why you married them, what you saw in them the first time you saw them across the room or in front of you in the back of a classroom. You remember and then treat them. Put words and action to that. And show them how valuable they are. And how we have found the best way to do this, and this will be your second homework assignment, is to have them complete this statement. I feel loved when you ... It's so simple. It's such an easy way to find out. How do they feel loved? What is it? What could you be doing to show them that you think they're pretty great? What is it? Because it's probably going to be different than what Greg's list is much different than mine. We asked about 1,000 couples to finish that sentence. I feel loved when you ... And so we got a bunch of answers back and we kind of compiled them. And I'm just going to quickly run through this list of what they said makes them feel valued. And so maybe you'll say, yeah, that one is one for me. And it'll help you even start your list. And your spouse may say, no, number 3 is the one for me. So this is what they said. They said when their spouse prays with them and shares a deep faith. There's something so amazing about sharing a deep faith together that causes some people even more than others to feel loved and safe. And the key is to feel safe so their hearts are open. And then that connection occurs. So pray with me and share a deep faith. Provide positive affirmation. So say kind things to me. You know, say, notice things that you like about me or what I've done or who I am. So positive affirmation. Express gratitude. It's such an easy one just to say thank you. Do you know that research shows that we thank strangers like fivefold more than we thank our spouse? Isn't that crazy? We'll thank a stranger on the street over thanking our spouse for something they do. So just simply, you know, saying thank you. Thank you for picking up my dry cleaning. Thank you for making dinner. Just those simple things.
As a matter of fact, when we asked this question, what helps you to feel loved? In other words, what helps you feel safe? We also asked him, what happens in a marriage that makes you feel most unsafe? And what was really interesting is there was one thing by far that stood out. What do you think that was? What do you think happens that makes people feel really unsafe in a relationship? Just throw out some ideas. What do you think that might... Which one? Criticism. That's actually it. I was hoping we'd get a whole bunch of wrong answers. So, way to steal my thunder, but fine. So, but isn't that interesting? And what's fascinating about gratitude is that gratitude is the exact opposite. It's really the antidote for criticism. Criticism when I'm very keenly aware of what you're doing that I don't like at all, versus gratitude is when I'm very aware of what you're doing. And so that's why that's so powerful. Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
That is a good one. Listen and validate my feelings. And we'll talk more about listening and validating, because you have an opportunity, whether you agree with what they're saying or you don't, you still have an opportunity to validate what they're feeling, what their experience is. Spend time with me. You think about the five love languages. As a matter of fact, I checked in at the Y the other day, and they said, hey, your husband wrote five love languages. I went, no, that would be Gary Chapman. Yeah.
Not even close,
but that's all right. Although, wrote a lot of other good ones.
Remember when like 3 years ago, we went to China to do this big marriage seminar, and there was like a line of like 100 Chinese waiting outside for me to sign their book. And I was thinking, I'm a big deal in China. I mean, who knew? And guess what they were all holding? Copies of Five Love Languages. That's hurtful.
I would say.
It's one thing to be called Gary Smalley. That's been a problem all my life. But now I'm Gary Chapman, too. So,
yeah.
I want part of them royalties. That's all I'm saying. So.
So you think about the five love languages that, you know, if your spouse, you know, if it's quality time that speaks love to them, then, you know, that will be a big deal for them to spend time with me. That will really help them to feel loved.
Do you talk about dating? Because that's
oh, yes. We have an initiative at Focus on the Family called Date Night Challenge. Have any of you heard about it or participated in it? We do an event, a live event once a year, and then we encourage churches to do 3 dates in 3 weeks. It's just kind of an initiative to keep couples dating. You know, it's easy when we are dating in an engagement period to go out on dates, but we encourage couples to continue spending that time, that positive time together, because it's so easy to become disconnected in our busy society. I know we definitely apply this, and we were getting ready to go on a date, oh gosh, 2-3 months ago. You want to tell them?
Well, so I surprised her with some tickets for a group when we were in high school, because in the 80s, they were coming through Colorado Springs. So I thought, oh, she'll love that. So that was kind of our date night. So we're sitting there in this big auditorium, the group's playing, and man, we're snuggled up, and she's got her head on my shoulder. I'm like, this is awesome, you know, power of a date night. And so they play, one of the songs went on. She's like, oh, she goes, that's my favorite song. And I forgot they sang it. And I went, that's like my favorite song too. And so I get this big nostalgic kind of memory. And I said, hey, do you remember the time when we were dating and we were driving and this song came on and you were telling me how much you loved it? And so I pulled off the side of the road in that parking lot and we sat there kissing, listening to the song. And she went, what a great memory. She goes, but that wasn't me. I still think that was you, okay? You're older, too. It doesn't mean my memory is the one that's
wrong.
Yeah,
so just to make sure when you're sharing memories about dating that it is, in fact, your spouse.
Yes.
It's helpful. Very helpful.
Awkward.
So spend time with me, and that can be in the form of dating. And, you know, if it is, just make sure that it's on track. You know, act curious about me. Just simply asking questions about, you know, just your day or, you know, how you're feeling about something or a specific situation, that it's powerful, because as couples, so often over the years, we just assume that we know each other. But the truth is, I know for me and ladies, do we not change constantly? I mean, my coffee order, my food orders, just so many different things change as our seasons change. You know, you become a mother or you know, when I lost my mom, I mean, it definitely, there were things that were different about me, and him being curious about that and asking questions was so meaningful. So as you change and as you go through seasons, update your information and your knowledge. Provide affection. Again, love languages, Gary Chapman. If it's physical touch for your spouse, that'll be a big one. Serve me in ways that are meaningful to me. This is a big deal, because so often we're going to try to love our spouse the way we want to be loved, What speaks love to us may not speak love to them. So whatever it is, make sure that you get this list from them and keep reading that and referring to it and using it to strengthen your marriage. And this is a big one for us. Have fun and laugh with me. Obviously, we started in the back of that classroom laughing together and having fun.
We?
I had fun.
Yeah.
And actually, I didn't tell you this. His friends actually put me up to that, so I can defend myself a little bit. But we have continued over the years to laugh and have fun. Even our kids have picked up on this, and practical jokes in our house are really a big deal. But it makes you feel loved, right?
It does. She's still doing this to me, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Which I do love.
That's good. I'm glad you do love it. But you need to make sure that your spouse loves practical jokes, because it may not do the same thing. Greg always feels very loved. About 5 years ago, when we were living in Arkansas, we were laying in bed one night, and I frequently hear noises at night. Do any of you other ladies hear noises at night? And this particular night, I thought I heard a car idling outside the house. It made no sense. Our house was set back off the road, but I just knew I heard a car idling. So, I mean, literally, year after year, I can wake this man up, and he will get up out of bed in the middle of the night. It was like 2 a.m. He gets up out of bed, and I think you go around the house and check windows, doors, children. But, you know, I don't know. He gets up out of bed. He leaves the room. So for some reason, this particular night, I decided that I was going to play a practical joke and just make him really feel loved. So I climbed over on his side of the bed, but before I totally got down, I put pillows and I lined my side of the bed. So because I knew when he came in, he knows me, that he would look to make sure that I was in bed. And so he, you know, I put my pillows down and I crawled down to his side of the bed and got down on the floor and I laid there quietly until you returned.
And this is like 3 in the morning. So she makes me get up. So I'm wandering around our house. And after I finished the game on the Xbox, I came back towards our bedroom. And I wham, I did. I hit the lights and I could look. And, you know, I thought I saw her. And so I turned the lights off. I just kind of stumbled around right to my side of the bed. So I'm just about to step in. And she's on the floor next to my bed. And so she screams bloody murder and then grabs me and tries to pull me down. So what do you think I'm thinking? It's the car idling man, you know, under our bed. You know, I never thought to think there. So I think I'm being murdered. And so I'm yelling out, I love you, see you in heaven, you know, kind of thing. Jeez. It's her. I'm telling her, I said, Aaron, clearly I'm older and my heart's weaker. I said, well, how are you going to explain this to our kids, you know? Dad's gone because it scared him to death, you know. But I got to tell you, though, after I went and changed my shorts and came back to bed, I've never felt more loved in all my life. That's what's so odd. Because I do, because I love it when she does that. So that is my love language, all right? So that's, I would put that on my list. I feel loved when you make me soil myself in our own bedroom. But anyway, so I love that. So the question is, though, what do you like? So what would speak love to you? That's the second part of your homework, is just to fill it out. And again, when you ask me, what do you need to feel loved? I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to come up with it. That's why, again, we all love Gary Chapman. But for some reason, that little statement, you know, is that, you know, I feel loved when you, you know, scare me, when you cook breakfast for me in the morning, you know, when you call me at work. I mean, just whatever they are, that's your list. I tell you, that's a goldmine of information. So we encourage you, start again with that attitude, that cherish. I value you because of these things. Just get clear on that. Okay, get clear on what do you need from me to feel loved? Just exchange that list. So those are the two things you're going to do. Okay, you should take hardly no time at all. But man, it's fun to kind of read through her list, you know, the things that she'll put down, you know, that I'll go, wow, I didn't know that. Because I think to Aaron's point is that we've got to stay current, because we do, we both change. We go through different seasons. You guys, someone, you know, something may be going on in your family. You may have just gone through a move or a job change or just whatever. And thus, we've got to stay current on what we really want from the other in terms of kind of nourishing us. Does that make sense? So cherish and nourish, going back to that verse, are two ways that we can really begin to build safety. And the more safety you have in this relationship, the more likely that our hearts are going to open to each other. And then all those things that you guys shouted out when we started, see, that's when those things can really happen. But do you see, though, why we're saying, we're suggesting you really think about that, that there is something powerful when we figure out how do we keep our hearts open to each other. I guarantee if you went through relationships that have ended in your life, whether that was a marriage, whether that was a friendship, maybe with a sibling, a coworker, I mean, if you really analyzed your relationships, I promise the ones you've lost at some point, either one or both of your hearts hardened to each other. That really is the kiss of death. And that's why more than anything, we want to guard our hearts above all else. We want to guard our hearts from closing. We want to keep those hearts open. So for the rest of the time, we're just going to keep adding in just different elements that are designed to keep our hearts open. Does that make sense? Any questions about that? I mean, we're here. So if that doesn't make sense, or if you have a question, or how would that look here? I mean, we'd love to answer those kinds of things. So you can ask them publicly or hit us up during a break or whatever that is. We'd love it. Why don't you guys stand up? Because I know you've been sitting for a while. Thank goodness I saw some of your faces. So what we found in the past, that when we've assigned these two exercises, that it's no accident that things tend to go wrong. Because I think, again, as Aaron said earlier, we have an adversary. He wants to kill, steal, and destroy the time together. He's very committed to your heart staying closed. And so I think any time we do these kinds of exercises, we just want to send you off with just having prayed over. So as we go to our break, and then we get to the privilege of listening to Stanley. Yes. Right? Next? Yes. Yes. You had that look like, I don't even know who you are. Why do you keep talking about me? Leave me alone. Just let me be. So, let's do that. We just want to pray for you guys. And then there's some announcements.